This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Steve Schooner. Steve is a Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. Got that all right, didn't I, Steve?
Wonderful. It's great to be here. Thanks for having me.
I passed my first test, right? Right, Professor?
Very, very well done.
Thank you. So, Steve, welcome. This is one of the first shows, or it is the first new show of 2013. And I want to.
14.
14. Hey, see, I'm already behind.
We're getting older.
You caught me.
Getting older.
You caught me. What year is it again? But 2014, so, you know, and as appropriate, it's a great opportunity to have you come in and talk about what happened last year and what can we look forward in 2014.
And that'll be a lot of fun. So I was glad that you scheduled a 24-hour consecutive show so that we could rehash last year.
Right.
But we'll try to prioritize so we can get through all this in an hour.
Okay. I do have to get home at some point. I know. So. Okay, so let's start with some of the big trends.
Okay, so we can talk about some of more of the specifics later, but I think what we ought to probably talk about first is a few of the macro or the bigger trends, and this is what I think we had in mind. One, let me talk a little bit about the spending trend line. I think we have to take a look at contracts and grants. Probably not a bad idea to look at protests and some other things. So unless you want me to do something else, let me go ahead and start with the burn rate.
Absolutely. And time is burning. So okay. Let's go.
All right. So the interesting thing when we look at 2013 is despite all the years in which we had been warned that the spending binge was over, the sky is falling. Well, the bottom line is the sky hadn't fallen. Well, interestingly enough, finally in 2013, we actually saw for the first time in, frankly, the modern era, a reduction in federal procurement spending. So let's go ahead and put that in context for a second. Now, we could go back much longer, but one way to think about it is since 2000, now already, we're talking 13 years already, going all the way back to 2000, federal procurement spending has gone up. And it hasn't just gone up, it went up dramatically between 2000 and 2008.
Right.
And if you look at the numbers, what really blows people away is it didn't just go up and track inflation. Federal procurement spending increased between 3 and 5 times the rate of inflation between 2000 and 2008. So it's in that period we go from literally $200 billion a year to all of a sudden $500 billion. I love the way people's eyes get big.
Right.
$500 billion. Okay. So obviously a lot of that was driven by Iraq and Afghanistan. But when the economy started slowing down in 2008, everybody said the same thing. This is going to come crashing down now. And so in 2009, we thought it would come down. In 2010, well, the crazy thing now is when you look at the numbers, and a lot of this is just a statistical fluke, there was basically almost no variation at all in 2009, right. 2010, 2011, into fiscal 2012. Now, we did see that first dip between 2011 and 2012, a small dip. But really, the first significant dip was in 2013, and the real eye-opener for most people is for the first time in a long time, we're back under $500 billion a year. So it really was a dramatic reduction in spending last year.
So, and what's the number?
So last year, looking back, and remember, if you look on the FPDS, the Federal Procurement Data System, or you look on USA Spending, they're constantly rewriting history because they're updating the data. The most right. current data I had as of about a week ago was the magic number for fiscal 2013 was $463 billion.
Yeah.
Now, if you think about the fact that from 2008 to 2011, we were basically pegged at $541 billion, there's a big difference between 463 and 540. We're talking $75, $80 billion less. That's a real reduction.
Right. So what are the, you know, from your perspective, the ramifications of that?
First, we have to figure out whether all the reduction is real. So one of the crazy things about 2013 is we basically had two sequestration exercises. So what's kind of weird about this is if you look back, there was this bizarre spending binge before the fiscal cliff was about to kick in. So the bottom line is everybody tried to get a bunch of stuff under contract expecting the sequestration.
Almost like it's a super end of fiscal year kind of situation,
so
right?
So in effect, we had multiple end of fiscal years last year. And then there was also a lot of confusion as to what the budget would be. So we don't know yet whether 463 is in fact what's going to become the new typical for a procurement year, or whether that reflects some of the chicanery and the, frankly, uncertainty that was driven by all the gamesmanship last year. But I think we're confident the number in 2014 is going to be under $500 billion again.
Right. So, but you also mentioned another thing when we were talking before the show is the commensurate, while spending's going down, oversight's going up. That's a big trend.
Right.
Could you touch on that a bit?
Yeah, sure. And you know, as we talk, maybe we'll talk more at the end of the hour about stories we'd like to forget from 2013. But the unequivocal message is oversight has been increasing, straight line increases since 2007, 2008, and that's not going to go away. So one of the things that's really frustrating now is what you're seeing is a reduction in spending and, frankly, probably an increase in transaction costs.
Right.
So,
and that does, you know,
it's not good for the government and it's not good for the contractors. And one of the most frustrating...
And not good for the taxpayer.
That too, right? But the other frustrating thing is there's no good data on this. And the government has no incentive to track transaction costs. But I don't think that there's any question looking into 2014 in the future. We're going to see the increase in oversight going up. One quick example. I think we saw a pretty clear message from the House and the Senate last year that they love the idea of automatically suspending and debarring contractors. And so I think if left to their own devices, they would do more of that. I don't think we're going to see it in this cycle, but I do think that they're pushing the Suspend Act where they might in fact consolidate suspension and debarment activities.
Yeah, but, which you have to wonder whether that's the right approach or not. I mean, what problem are they really trying to fix? Or
exactly.
Or create a headline.
But let me throw in one other really big macro trend issue when we talk about the numbers. You know, if you took a room of contract experts or contract legal experts and you put them in the room, most of them would agree there's not really much difference between a federal government contract and a federal grant. In fact, some of it's a label and some of it is a statutory categorization, but the bottom line is they're both business deals where the government's going to pay to get something in return.
And there's a set of rules that go with them, and often they're very similar, right? Or
similar,
the cost principles and things like that.
But more importantly is the differences. So what we've been watching now for a long time is there's all this oversight in government contracts, but the oversight level and the amount of scrutiny is simply much less on grants. And what's crazy about that is, you know, we've been looking at the data for a number of years now, basically for, I think it's 11 out of the last 13 years at this point. Let me go back and check my numbers, but I'm pretty sure that's right. 11 out of the last 13 years, the government has spent more money on grants than it has on contracts, but there's more oversight on contracts than there is on grants, which has to make you a little bit crazy. Well, so here's the interesting thing is that after years of watching this and nobody doing anything about it, last year, the White House threatened to do something about it. And then finally, and when I say finally, I mean right at the end of the calendar year, we finally saw the new rules that came out on grants. So the rules came out officially on December 26. So it's 78 Federal Register 78590. That's for all of you driving who want to text this number right now. That's 78 FedReg 78590. In all seriousness, in the Federal Register on December 26. And this is a whole new
package. Did you mean tweet?
What's that?
Did you mean tweet as opposed to text?
I guess I'm being nuts, but in any event.
We're showing our age.
Don't text and drive. In fact, the Federal Acquisition Regulation now tells you that you shouldn't text and drive, and contractors are required or actually encouraged to basically counsel their employees not to text and drive. You didn't know that was in the FAR, did you?
No, you know what? But you know what? We'll solve all the world's problems through the procurement system right now. We'll get to them all, right?
Awesome.
Hey, go ahead, Steve.
But here's the crazy thing about this. So grants have been much less regulated than contracts for all these years, And now there's this whole push to get them regulated more consistently with contracts, so there's more oversight, because again, we're spending equal amounts of money. There's probably lots of waste in grants as well. But the crazy thing is, if you read the new rules, it's almost like you're on the planet Magoomba or something like that. There's no obvious thematic reality in it. There are two major goals that are articulated. So on the one hand, the administration indicates that these new reforms are going to improve the integrity of financial management and the operation of these programs and strengthen accountability for federal dollars and will protect against fraud, waste, and abuse, okay? But at the same time, they're also touting that the new rules are going to increase efficiency and make it easier to for people to get grants. Well, if we've learned anything in the last few decades of government contracts, is you can do one or you can do the other.
Yeah, you can do
you
both.
You can't do both.
Right.
There is no feasible way that the government, as we know it, is going to increase flexibility, streamline their procedures, and at the same time, increase accountability and reduce fraud, waste, and abuse.
Right. Hey, Steve, you know what? And I'm accountable. I have to take a break right now. But when I come back, we'll be talking more to Steve Schooner. He is the Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And when we come back, we'll just touch briefly, real quick, on the last sort of trend that we wanted to talk about is bid protest in 2013. There was a drop, and Steve has some thoughts on that. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Steve Schooner. Steve is a Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And Steve, when we took the break, I promised the listening audience that you'd have an opportunity to talk a little bit about bid protests in 2013. So, you know, what happened?
Well, I think there's going to be a lot of people running around, waving their arms, cheering, jumping up and down, saying that the number of protests declined in 2013. You know, we can debate another day at some length whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, but let me just put a couple things in perspective. First of all, it is true that we have been watching the number of protests climb for a number of years. And for people that don't like protests, that's been considered a negative. We can talk about whether they're right or wrong or not, but in any event, last year, we saw a 2% dip in protests. Look, we can argue that 2% is not statistically significant, and in fact, it's actually stable. But if you're watching the trend line, it is a reversal of the trend line. And for the people who are opposed to protests, that's a great thing. But a couple other things to keep in mind, just real quick. As much as protests went up in the last few years, the peak this time around is dramatically lower than it was in the early 1990s, when it was significantly
sure.
higher. So for anybody who thinks these are the prime years of protests, not even close to what it was in the early 1990s. The other thing is,
Just a thought on that. You know, when I worked in the GSA Office General Counsel at the time, and literally the number of protests we used to get in a calendar year, compared to what GSA gets now, In GSA gets as many protests in an entire year now that they would get in one quarter,
right?
And
the focus of the protests has moved as well too, but the total number, even at its peak 2 years ago, is nowhere near where it was back in the early 1990s. Now we can argue that some of the protests are more significant and that the protesters' council have become more sophisticated. But the bottom line is there's fewer protests, whether you like it or not. So shouldn't get worried about the trend. But one other thing that was really interesting last year, my colleague Dan Gordon, who used to be the OFPP administrator, did some great empirical research on the costs and benefits of bid protests. Because the only data that most people have is the GAO data on effectiveness rate, which, you know, there's a lot of reasons to question them at the margins. But I think Dan's research is really interesting. It was published in the Public Contract Law Journal. It was reprinted for the most part in the Contract Management Magazine. But that data is out there. We had a conference on it. I think it's really interesting data. And anybody thinking about a protest ought to look at that stuff.
Yeah, it's really good stuff to take a look at. Absolutely. So let's turn to the next set of topics we wanted to discuss today. And, you know, we got to follow the money, right, Steve?
Yeah.
Right.
So Who spends all the money?
Right. So let's talk a little bit about DOD. So
as always, an interesting year for the Defense Department, right?
Oh, absolutely. So, I'll let you tackle that any way you want to, but let's start with the Better Buying Power Initiative and, you know, give us an update on that.
Okay. So one of the most dramatic changes that we saw in the Better Buying Power Initiative is that we have officially transferred or, you know, transitioned from what they call BBP 1.0 to BBP 2.0, which of course changes everything because when you change the number one to a change the number two.
It's twice as good.
Right. You know, I think more importantly, we've had a little bit of time to watch this initiative evolve under Frank Kendall's leadership rather than Ash Carter's. And we'll come back to Ash Carter a little bit later before the end of the hour. But, you know, I think the bottom line is Frank Kendall, the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition Technology and Logistics, first and foremost, he refined the message.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he made the message fundamentally more constructive. And for the people who were extremely cynical about it, the best thing that he put in his rollout of Better Buying Power 2.0 is that zinger right in the middle of the memo. I love reading it out loud. The first responsibility of the acquisition workforce is to think.
Right.
I got to read it again. The
Please
first
do.
Responsibility of the acquisition workforce is to think. So Frank understands that you can promulgate all the rules you want, and you can wave your arms all you want, and you can scream at people and chastise them. But until your buyers are thinking creatively and thinking like business people, you're not going to get good outcomes. You know, look, at the same time, when they rolled out Better Buying Power 2, the memo also says, I got to read it again. Qualified people are essential to successful outcomes. And professionalism drives results more than policy change.
Absolutely.
Okay?
Yep.
So write all the memos you want, but if your people don't act like sophisticated business professionals, you can take all those memos and stack them on top of the last ignorant memo that you sent.
Right.
But this kind of messaging, I think, is really, really important. You know, another one that I loved in Better Buying Power 2.0, you know, he comes right out and says, acquisition fundamentals work. Okay. What are the basics? Now, this is something you wouldn't have heard under Better Buying Power 1.0. One of the first basics, effective incentives to industry. Right?
Right.
These
Absolutely.
Are bargains. Right. How right. do you make people perform well? You give them incentives.
Right.
You know, I testified on the Hill about this a few years ago. You could look at what happened when they rebuilt that bridge up in Minneapolis after the bridge disaster. You can look at the cleanup of Rocky Flats. There's a lot of really good examples of how being willing to pay significant performance incentives or profits spurs exceptional performance, right?
Right. So, absolutely.
Hey, Frank understands. That's great. Frank talks about understanding and actively managing technical risk. Awesome. I love this one. How about getting demonstrated progress before making major commitments? Good. Okay. And then, of course, the other one, rather than necessarily just pounding the drum that all cost reimbursement contracts are bad, Frank says, use the right contract for the job.
Right. All right. Absolutely. It's, you know, to your point, it's a thoughtful approach. It's a pro. Hey, you like that, huh? It's true. I mean, the idea, you know, people have to think, and that fundamentally was really what it boils down to. You can have all the rules or all the streamlining you want. If people can't think and execute and make good business decisions and create, to your point, incentives for companies to do, to do good work, yeah, it's just not going to work in the long run. Right.
Right. So for where I sit, Better Buying Power 2.0 looks completely different and significantly better
Absolutely.
Than Better Buying Power.
So I was right when I said it's twice as good, right?
But I will tell you that we do hear pretty consistently from the private sector some amount of concern or hesitation, because what they're saying is they watch Frank Kendall talk, they see the lips move, they hear him say the right things, and they believe he believes it. But they're not convinced he has buy-in from the Puzzle Palace, from the whole
yes.
Pentagon yet.
Right.
So it's going to take a while to see if this actually turns into cultural change, But I think it's a big improvement. And
absolutely.
The correlated one or the related item that I think may have been the most intellectually interesting document of the year last year is that after all this time, the Defense Department is seriously considering the issue of performance measures or performance metrics in acquisition. And so for those of you who are out there, if you haven't had an opportunity to read it yet, I really love this first, they called it the ATNL's First Defense Acquisition System Performance Report. And you can get it on the DAU or the BBP, the Better Buying Power webpage. But, you know, basically they said they were going to do it in Better Buying Power. And then the Defense Department went back and they put a lot of thought into looking at their outcomes. How are they doing right in the system? The report is very, very long. It's got lots of interesting findings on it. I've got about a dozen of my favorites, but some of them are really interesting and not surprising. But it's what's really interesting is to read rational assessments of empirical data from the Defense Department. Let me just mention a couple of them. I'll give you one of my favorites. Again, you won't be surprised by this one. Intelligent acquisition is key, right?
Right, there you go.
Think, make good decisions, guess what happens, okay? Listen to this one. And again, their language is perfect on some of these. Get ready. Programs with bad starts often continue to have programs. Okay?
Right.
So, you know, for anybody who's worked in a major system, you're used to hearing these terms workarounds. I'm going to fix that.
Right.
Well, maybe. What have we learned when you look at the data? If you start off on the wrong foot, you know, for the skiers, right? Everybody says, you know, that first turn you take at the top of the hill often defines the rest of your run as you go
absolutely
downhill.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's what the data shows. If you start out in the hole, you may never get out of the hole. Okay, a couple others that are really fun. I love this one. Performance relative to original baselines does not guarantee lowest end cost to the taxpayer. Now, if I was going to write a book tomorrow, this would be my thesis. What do we measure in government contracts? We look at how the contractor performs against the original contract price, the original schedule, and the original performance specs. Okay? But that's not correlated to business. All you're doing is assessing how the contractor did against the bargain rather than thinking about things like customer satisfaction right or value for money, right?
Absolutely. So, productivity increase, whatever, right?
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So the problem is we've been looking at the wrong metrics for a long time. Now, here's my all-time value. Can we get one more break?
No. Okay. I've got some metrics I got to deal with.
I got one for you after the break.
Okay.
One more great one.
But we do have to take a break right now. My guest today is Steve Schooner. He is Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And when we come back, I'll give Stephen a chance to finish his thought about performance measurements at DOD. You are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
These days, it seems everyone's talking about the new normal, but federal agencies have a chance to define it. How will you shape your future? Turn to Deloitte. We understand what makes America work and how it can work better. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we can help you rethink, reduce, and restructure, or even change the game. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM today. My guest is Steve Schooner. Steve is the Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And Steve, when he took the break, I had to stop you. You had to get your last, we tried to get your last comment in about...
Once he gets going.
About performance measurement, DOD's performance measurement initiative and some of the observations from that. And go ahead.
So there's dozens of fascinating observations, but the one that I simply have to mention again is one of the first significant ones. So basically what the report says is if they look at the history of major defense acquisition programs, so MDAP contracts, they looked at a bunch of these contracts and they concluded that it revealed no statistical correlation between the use of contract type and lower cost or schedule growth. And then they say, in other words, the type of contract used in each case did not result in a statistically significant difference in cost growth. Hello?
Yeah.
Hello?
Yeah.
Okay. So most of us have spent our entire professional careers hearing that choice of contract type was going to be the panacea. Sophisticated sure. people have always said, no, that's just not the case. You use the right contract at the right time. What DOD's data is showing them is that good programs meet their schedules, come in under their cost projections. Bad schedules don't, it makes no difference what type of contract you have. The right thing is to use the right contract in the right situation.
Does that boil down to requirements, the requirements rather than, you know, like substance
well,
versus
absolutely.
Form,
right? You got to think about what you're buying and the context in which you're buying it.
Right.
There's variables, but look, the FAR's guidance on when you use a fixed price versus a cost reimbursement contract is actually perfectly rational.
Mm-hmm.
If we were just permitted to follow that. But, you know, we've just gone through a number of years where top down, the White House or the Defense Department says, hey, go do fixed price or do fixed price research and development. And I think enough people have demonstrated at this point that fixed price research and development is probably a fool's errand. But that's a topic for another day.
Right. No, we'll have other days this year. It's 2014, a brand new day, year and time. So let's turn to personnel a little bit.
People.
Let's use the term people.
Interesting year, 2013.
Okay. Well, what are your thoughts?
So 2013 is obviously a year of transitions, and I'll just mention a few of what I think are the key transitions in just a second. But you can't talk about people without talking about the acquisition workforce. And frankly, you know, 2013 was a disappointing year for the acquisition workforce. You know, whether we liked it or not, we learned in 2012 and 2013 that the big investments in rebuilding the acquisition workforce were basically over. There's not enough money to do it. So we knew that was going to happen. The most disappointing thing that we saw is that most of the energy at the top in 2013 was much more focused on consolidating and organizing training rather than getting more training or better training.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, anytime you hear that the major guidance coming out of OFPP is primarily about rearranging deck chairs on the Titanic, it kind of breaks my heart. But we know, and we've known literally since 2006, many of us knew much earlier, but we've known on the record since 2006, we don't have enough people to manage the government's business well. We still don't have the right type of people. We have tremendous inadequacies in terms of how much we spend on training. We surely don't have enough of the right types of training, and we don't have the kind of time and money that contracts professionals need to get rotational assignments, networking, and the like. So it's really frustrating.
One of the things that I'm concerned about is that experiential, you know, training, like getting out and actually doing things and having mentors and that kind of thing, and how that's working out too. I think it's just a loss, like your point, a loss of funding and a loss of energy and a loss to focus on it.
Right. No one has the time and no one has the money. Look, I'll give you a good example. Over the last few years, a lot of us have been really impressed by the work they've been doing up in Frederick, in Maryland, at the Veterans Administration Acquisition Academy. They created a 3-year internship program to get people into the system, and it didn't take them long until they truncated it down to 2 years,
right?
Now, I hope they can keep doing something like they're doing up there, but for most agencies, that's simply too expensive and too time-consuming. They don't have time, and they don't have the kind of money necessary to train and integrate and give people the experience they need to really be able to make sophisticated business decisions.
Right. Well, you know, I wanted to ask you this question before we turn to specific individuals. Well, you know, I know GW has a master's program in this area, and, you know, what are you guys doing to try to, you know, grow the acquisition workforce?
Well, I mean, I have to say, we've actually been ecstatic with how the launch of the programs worked in the last couple of years. We brought in Neil Couture to help basically think through the system to make sure it works. But again, the program is a joint effort between the George Washington University Law School and the business school. We call it a Master of Science in Government Contracting. So if you put MSGC and GW into your search engine, it'll pop right up. But we have a healthy mix of business professionals from industry and from the private sector. And what we're trying to do is give them a good, solid grounding in both the business and law of how government contracts works. You know, it's a lot of work, frankly.
Yeah.
It's a sophisticated master's degree. But we think that it will, in fact, help people understand their profession a little bit more, and hopefully that'll turn into good business opportunities for them. But look, the fact that a number of people have come into our program, and we're ecstatic about that, we can't solve the acquisition workforce.
Yeah, I understand that, but you can contribute. Yeah, you can contribute to trying to address it, and Hey, anytime you want to ask me to come talk to the students, I'll be happy to do that.
we'll do that.
That's a shameless plug. So let's turn to specific peoples who may have left this year or what their legacies are and that sort of thing.
So lots of interesting things in 2013, but the one that's really kind of interesting since it's in the news just the last week or so, I'm guessing by the time this show airs, Secretary of Defense Gates' book will probably be out on your bookshelves by then. And the book is highly critical of any number of people, but the passage that really struck me is when the former Secretary of Defense describes how disgusted he is with the immature, petulant, ridiculous behavior of the United States Congress. And the idea that these people who aren't managing their own house, aren't dealing with the budget, care about their own reelection more than actually the welfare of the country, are so fundamentally rude and childish and ridiculous in hearing showing off for the cameras. It's a brilliant passage in the book, and I think all Americans should read it, and politicians should have it written on the back of their shirts or something like that. But I'm looking forward to seeing the whole book.
Right, yeah. The Wall Street Journal's had some excerpts from it. Yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
All right, so let's talk about some of the really big changes at the end of last year. You know, the first, probably the most significant, is that Ash Carter is stepping down from the Defense Department. Currently, he is the Deputy Secretary of Defense. Before that, he had the job Frank Kendall was in now. He was the Undersecretary for Acquisition Technology and Logistics. And, you know, it's interesting that there's no question that he was an incredibly intelligent guy with a fascinating national security background, but he was never the right guy for the acquisition job to begin with. And you could clearly make the argument he never met the statutory requirements for the job in the first place, but that's ancient history at this point.
Spoken like a lawyer right there. Go ahead. Yeah.
Most people are going to say that his biggest legacy in terms of acquisition is better buying power, right? That was clearly his idea. The problem is that a number of people are also going to come to the conclusion that part of his legacy was a legacy of hostility to the private sector. And a number of people will remember a couple of his early interactions with large numbers of extremely senior people in the government were basically situations where he demanded that the private sector come to him so he could speak down to them and make pronouncements about how they would do business with the government. I think it took him a long time to learn that contracts are basically business partnerships. And
absolutely.
I think that he softened his message over time. But again, I think that what we're seeing with Frank Kendall with Better Buying Power 2.0 is, again, a much more sophisticated message in 1.0 than it was in 1.0. And I have to admit, I'm not terribly sad to see him go at this point. You know, another big change over at the Office of Federal Procurement Policy, the OFPP administrator stepping down as well. You know, I don't think it's going to be any secret. I don't think history is going to recall Joe Jordan as one of the great or the epic OFPP administrators. It's a very difficult job, and he was there at a very difficult time with an administration that was not terribly business-oriented to begin with. I don't think there's any question that he probably strengthened the small business message when he was there. But I think he too easily fell into the trap of trying to give the administration success stories even if they weren't there. And the one that I would point to is from a year ago. He basically went on the White House blog and said that the reason that acquisition spending was going down is because the government was buying better.
Better, right.
Well, no, the reason that acquisition spending was starting to reduce is we weren't spending as much money in Iraq and Afghanistan. I mean, this isn't rocket science, but it is the truth. And sometimes that's basically what should come from the White House.
Right. On that note, we do have to take our last break. When we come back, we'll be talking more to Steve Schooner, National Spending Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And you are listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
The mission of government involves critical efforts to improve national defense, economic security, health services, and citizens' lives. The strategy and technology consultants of Booz Allen Hamilton are proud to help government address cyber threats, reform the financial system, modernize infrastructure, and protect our nation. For nearly 100 years, Booz Allen has partnered with clients to deliver results that endure. To see Booz Allen's ideas in action, visit BoozAllen.com.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, my guest is Steve Schooner. Steve is the National Sabinic Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And Steve, I wanted to do a little thing on stories we'd like to forget, or just the big stories of 2013 and I'm going to run through them and some of them and let you.
And one of the things, before you start on this, the main reason that I think it's worth spending a few moments on this is there's always going to be a procurement scandal in any given year. But one of the things we have to remember about 2013, whether we like it or not, is the bad stories were really bad. And what that means is it's not a year where the private sector or the procurement professionals can stand up and say, now is the time for less oversight. We all know that the oversight is inefficient. And we all know that the process is becoming difficult. But frankly, 2013 was a really bad year in terms of public relations for government contracts.
Well, maybe we can think about what's intelligent oversight.
Right? That would be great.
Okay. This year. So let's talk about healthcare.gov rollout and get your thoughts.
You know, so it's been all over the newspapers. As everybody knows at this point, the government was going to launch a new online service. And whether you want to call it Obamacare or the Affordable Care Act, it doesn't make any difference. There needed to be a massive online vehicle so that people could sign up for these services. And the problem was we had an arbitrary deadline for launching it. The government chose a contractor. The government did not give terribly clear direction. There was a lot of confusion at the top in terms of who was in charge. The contractor warned the government in advance that they weren't going to be ready. They were getting too many different directions. There are obviously some management problems at the contractor as well, but that's been an unmitigated disaster since the launch. And frankly, they're at the point now where they're replacing the contractor. But that's been a bad news story from day one. It's a bad news story for the contractor in terms of the fact that they've been skewered in the press. Bad news story for the government acquisition regime because it was poorly managed. Probably bad news in terms of how the acquisition was handled itself. But nothing good for our systems coming out of that one.
Yeah, it's not a great situation. And so let's talk about another one. How about...
Snowden. Okay. So, you know, whether we like it or not, last year was the year that we saw one of the most significant intelligence breaches that we've seen in this country. You know, look, we're talking Pentagon Papers type stuff here. But what everybody's going to remember about the great big Snowden intelligence breach was that this guy was a contractor. Now, on the one hand, you might say, well, how different was this Snowden guy from Bradley Manning, which was the last big intelligence breach? But the reality is that when Snowden actually went to the media with all this information that he was making available, he was a contractor. He'd previously been a government employee, but this one still comes down to how did a contractor get access to all that information? How did it get released? We've since seen criticism of the way that contractor security clearances are being handled. But I don't think there's any question that the overall tension with regard to the issue that it sounds a lot easier to trust government people, it sounds a lot easier to mistrust government employees or contractor employees who have access to sensitive government information. We all realize it's a fact of life at this point, but the Snowden story has been a bad one for government contracting.
Okay, let's look at another one. How about...
The Glenn Marine?
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so only in 2013 could what I have to call the Fat Leonard scandal not be the big story of the year. If you haven't been following this, the Navy is embroiled in a brutal scandal right now where basically you had an Asian contractor that was doing all kinds of services for the Navy. Now, the great thing is Glenn Marine, the key player there's nickname is Fat Leonard. And the fact that he's plying government employees with prostitutes and Lady Gaga tickets only makes it all the more dramatic. But the real problem is this is another situation where significant national security information was being used inappropriately for private gain. So in effect, senior people in the Navy were sharing classified information with regard to ship movements, basically so that the contractor could have access to and manipulate contract pricing. The really sad thing about this story is apparently a lot of people knew it was going on. Heads have been rolling in a number of different directions. One of the most disturbing things about the story is that the Navy's top intelligence officer and its director of intelligence operations have both been placed on leave and had their access to classified information suspended. So it's a pretty significant issue in that regard.
Right. I know one you wanted to talk about, too, was the Iraq, Afghanistan, and visas for contractors, interpreters.
Yeah, so I've been doing research for a number of years about the fact that lots of contractors have lost their lives in Iraq and Afghanistan, just like our people in uniform have, but they don't necessarily make it into the media. One of the most disturbing stories we saw from last year was that the United States government had promised visas to a lot of these interpreters so that after they had worked for the United States government, they could come to the United States, because otherwise they'd probably be killed if they returned to their homes. The government promised thousands and thousands of visas, and then they basically didn't process the applications. So it was a promise made by the United States government, but unfortunately, it was a promise not fully fulfilled. And I think, frankly, it's a pretty sad thing.
Okay, I'll give it a chance. Any one last thing you want to touch base on? We have about a minute left.
Well, I think one of the other fun ones to watch is that after 23 or 24 years of litigation, it appears that Congress has passed legislation so that the A-12 litigation going back to 1991 will finally be over. So maybe that's an optimistic note to end on. But in any event, it was great to be here, and I'm looking forward to an exciting year in 2014.
Steve, thanks for joining me on the show, and I'm looking forward to seeing what happens in 2014, and we'll do this again. So I want to thank my guest, Steve Schooner. He is the Nash and Sabinick Professor of Government Procurement Law at the George Washington University Law School. And you have been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.